Are you ready to go offside? Because it's Offside Hockey Talk with your host, James Roberts. Here we go again. The boys are back behind the mic sitting down on a Friday. That's right. The weekend is about to kick off with the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets in the play-in. Welcome, everyone, to Offside. We are proudly brought to you by Muskoka Spray Foam Installation and Highland Custom Builders, your vision-built custom. Kyle, how's the day shooting with you?
Hey, my man. Well, you know, it's Friday, so it's already a good day. I'm just excited to be on and chatting with you, as always, my friend. How are you doing?
You know what? It's piping hot out here in Nova Scotia. I haven't slept literally in almost like 3 days. You know, the central air in the house is not doing so good. Got to get them in to fix it. So it's been a trying few days, but you know what? Hockey is getting me through, so.
Right, and there's more on the way, so it's just a bright spot in the long, dark tunnel we've been in, my friend.
That's the truth. Well, I want to talk to you about that long, dark tunnel. Obviously, we've seen the Toronto Maple Leafs take on the Montreal Canadiens on Tuesday night, scoring quickly on Carey Price. Everything looked a little sloppy, a little sluggish to begin, and then on second period, I noticed it was tightening up a bit, but I want to hone in on a few players that were kind of under the microscope in the bubble. One was Cody Ceci, one was Tyson Barrie, the other was Nick Robertson and Ilya Mikheyev. We'll start with the latter first. Mikheyev scoring 30-something seconds in, picking right up where he left off from camp. The guy looks like his feet are good. He's been skating the entire time. The wrist look like it has no ill effects, and he does look like he's gelling with Mr. Tavares and Marner. Your thoughts on Mr. Big 65, Ilya Mikheyev?
Well, that goal 33 seconds in was, no, you can't take anything away from Mr. JT. You know, he fed him beautifully, but to see Mikheyev put that one in and to see how he was playing on that line, like you said there, with him gelling with Tavares and getting those top line minutes, you can really see he's taking it and running with it. He was a big part of that game, not just with that goal, obviously, but he definitely was a standout during that game. He was all over the ice. He was making plays. He was moving the puck. Like you said, the wrist didn't look like it was affecting him in any way. I said it to a couple people. Mikheyev didn't look like he missed a beat. I remember when he got hurt, everybody said, well, is he going to be the same when he comes back? It's a long layoff. And then, you know, with COVID and everything else, you know, it's been a long road for him, and it was just nice to see him get back to his form that we knew him as, and Superman's back, so it was exciting to see him out there flying around again.
No, it's exactly exciting to see Soupy back, and I'm really excited to see the fact that he's gelling with his teammates, and like I said, the wrist has no ill effect. He was taking the body, he was doing well. I want to see that translate against a Columbus team that stymied the Boston Bruins last night. So a little bit worried seeing what's going to happen with Columbus. They can bore you to death. But we'll talk a little bit more about these players, and we'll jump into that series. But Cody Ceci, for me, I mean, it's like oil and water. I mean, this guy, I want him to work out so bad, but he's definitely either got bottom pairing or spare defenseman written all over him. And I know we need a body that's experienced that can play, and maybe him and Riley find some lightning in a bottle during the playoffs, but I'm not sold on the guy. I'm not sold after the game against Montreal. There was a few gaffes that he made that were noticeable. But, I mean, he's a serviceable defenseman, yes, but at what extent? I was really shocked that we didn't get to see Rasmus Sandin, especially over Marty Marinson. But we'll talk about that in a bit. But for you, do you think Cody Ceci stays top pairing with Morgan Riley, or does he slide down and we see another guy move up into that spot?
All right. Well, there's two answers to this question. Personally, I hope he's not. As you said, too many gaps, too many laxy-daisy moves that get picked off, or it looks like at times he's just not there. As for, are we going to see him? Is he going to be serviceable to us? Unfortunately, folks, he's a big body. I agree with you. I would love to see Rasmus Sandin in there. I think he brings so much more versatility to his game and to what he can offer for the whole entire line when he's on the ice. CeCe, he's just a big body. He can move people around, and that's where I think he beats Sandin out, especially coming into this playoff format and what it is going to be like. You're going to need to move bodies. When you run into a team like Columbus or a team like Boston, you're going to have to move bodies in front of the net, and those bodies aren't little people, right? So, I mean, it's hard to swallow. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of Cody CeCe. I'm not going to sit here and say I am. He makes some good plays. He can move the puck when he's in the game. But for me, most of the time, it just seems like he's not with the playbook, and it's frustrating, especially when you know you have these young guys waiting to get their chance and really shine. And I mean, Rasmus Sandin, I mean, how can you say he's done anything wrong in any time he's played with the Leafs? I mean, the kids look good every step. He's got what it takes. I mean, minus the bit of size, but that doesn't stop him from throwing bodies around. So I would really like to see Sandin get a shot over CeCe, especially Marincin as well. As you said, we'll get into that. I see why they have CeCe in, but I'm not a fan of it. So I would definitely rather see somebody else get a chance.
I think they're trying to go with their best horses, and I mean, Sandin's not proven yet. And like I said, we will scratch that itch in a minute. But I move on to Tyson Barry, a player that I said, you know, a few days ago to you and Jen, has to come into this series looking like a guy that needs to make the $8 million he's looking for. He needs to play this playoffs like this is writing himself that big fat paycheck. And if he's going to play like he did against the Montreal Canadiens, and I tweeted it out as soon as it happened, the exit on the zone exit, he tried to get the puck up the boards. He gave it right away, yeah. But he danced right around him. And Tyson Barry is supposed to have speed, but he got around him easily, and Barry couldn't catch him. He was flat-footed. It looked like, you know, and you know what? Okay, it's a one-game sample size. Don't freak out. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We only have one game to judge everybody by. This is the only measuring stick we have. It's not the NBA. You don't get 5 or 6 or 8 games. You get one game to see what your guys have got. And Tyson Barry wasn't locked in. And I know that they may not be going 100% full speed, but those little plays, getting it out of your zone, those are the things that are your Achilles heel that kill you, especially against a team like Columbus that will wait to capitalize on your mistakes, because that's the type of team they are. They'll grind you down, and they'll bore you to death, and they'll wait. And moves like that by Tyson Barry will not fly. And you look at Tyson Barry, and what is he now compared to? He is now the comparison to Jake Gardner. He is our new age Jake Gardner, with the beautiful, can get the pass up the ice, can skate, can wheel, can score, can do different things offensively. But when it comes to those little moments, if he's under just a little bit of pressure, he makes those mistakes. And I think that's why Colorado was so, not eager, but willing to get away from him, because they had a better replacement in Cale Makar. And also, they noticed these things as well, so why not bring in an asset like a Nazem Kadri? But Tyson Barry, to me, has to lock down those little things. And I'm not a coach. I'm not making millions of dollars. And, you know, I'm not an NHL player. But when I can notice that you're not making the smart play and a guy dances around you and your effort level is absolute dog shit, then obviously the rest of us can see the same thing.
Yep. And it's 100% correct. And, you know, like you said, the small things, right? And for anybody who's ever played sports or had, you know, been around organized team activities, what does a coach or anybody, a mentor, anybody ever tell you? Do the little things right and you'll find success. So if you're not doing the little things right in practice, are you going to be doing the little things right in the game? Because like what I was always told is, if you practice like you play, you'll play at your best every time. So if I'm seeing a guy that's supposed to be making $8 million a year, or potentially could be making $8 million a season on my blue line, those little things better be done every time. And that's one thing that's frustrated me about Tyson Barry. And you can say the move to Toronto, getting accustomed, I get all that. I've played sports. I played higher levels. I've been traded. I know what it's like. It sucks. But you're also a paid professional doing a job that many, many, many people in this world would love to do. So you got to find it. So to come in and have excuses and have these performances where, like you said, these little passes to get out of your zone, when those are literally, those are bread and butter for you. Like these aren't even, and it's not like it was any difficult scenarios for him to get out of. You know, so I find it really frustrating, and I'll take this back to the Cody CeCe thing as well. He just looks like, and Jake Gardner, as you said, and it sucks because once you said that, I was just like, wow, it's so true though, right? Like, he just has those brain fart moments where you're like, what were you doing? Or what were you looking at? Or what were you thinking, Like, what? I would love to have been in his head and just be like, where did you see that?
Like, what? Yeah, where did what you see it going?
Yeah, like, what in your mind said, this is going to be a good idea? You know?
No.
So, I mean, it's frustrating, man. Like, Tyson Berry, don't get me wrong, the guy can skate, he can play the game, he has great versatility, he can do many things. But like you said, if you're not doing those little things, that everything else isn't going to work out and it's not going to matter. So, I mean, I'm going to put it out there. I personally think we can do better on the blue line. I mean, for what we need, I think, like, we have a Mojo Morgan Riley. We have a Rasmus Sandin that's going to be able to wheel the puck. We have a Dermott, you know what I mean? Or, you know what I mean? So, it's just, I don't see the need to force these contract talks or have these guys like a Jay Gardner or a Tyson Berry for whatever, a Cody Ceci, that are just going to have those moments. When you know Rasmus Sandin, at least if Rasmus Sandin has those moments, it's a learning curve. You know what I mean? Like, Tyson Berry, you've been in the league long enough, you know what you're doing. So I find it frustrating when you have a team that's so good that these little things just continue to hinder you. And it seems like it's isolated to a few certain players, and that's more frustrating than anything. And I'm a diehard Leaf fan, so I get way too emotionally invested into this stuff, you know what I mean? So it is what it is. I take too much into it, but at the end of the day, Tyson Berry has to be better. I expect more from a Tyson Berry-type player. I know Sheldon Keefe and his staff do as well, and I think he's got to be held accountable. If he wants that kind of money as well, you've got to be held accountable. What was the first thing we all said about Marner, JT, and Matthews when they got that money?
Yep.
You better be accountable. You better be the best player on the ice every time you're on the ice. You want $10 million, you want $12 million, fine. But you better give me $12 million worth of ice time. You know what I mean? And that's what it comes down to. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's tough to say. It's tough to see where his head's at. But all we can do is hope for better things as we get into this playoff format.
No, you know what? You're 100% right. Those players need to be the best players on the ice. And I look at it like this, and there was a player named Dion Phaneuf that came through with a lot of fanfare, became our captain, then got labeled as a guy that was missing the big hits. And the shots were going too high and this, that, and the other stuff. And what happened? The coaching staff simplified his game and made him a tradable asset to the Ottawa Senators, where we did not retain any salary, which to this day blows my mind. But they fixed his game to an extent. The same thing can be done with a Cody Ceci and a Tyson Berry. Here's the problem. Like I've said many times about the Babcock era with Tyson Berry, you only have a player for a year. He's basically a rental to you. You cannot change the spots on this Leopard because he is not going to be here next year. So his habits and the way that he plays is what you need to accept. And you need to excel at those things and let him excel. So what do? You give him the lesser minutes. You give him the easier assignments. You give him the power play unit and let him be able to quarterback a little bit, maybe split it up between him and Mojo, and let him get his points. But you do not put him in those pressure cooker situations because we know what's going to happen. So you need to make sure you're putting this player in his best position to succeed and not expecting him to be able to bail you out of problems. You have other guys for that. And maybe that was just Keith's way of seeing what he could do the other night. And we'll leave it at that and see what happens. But the other guy that I was really excited about, the fanfare was up. Everybody was jumping around. A lot of people were saying, oh, don't give this guy too much hype because you're going to ruin him. You know, put him back in the AHL, which I'm a big, huge proponent of. I don't want to see Nick Robertson get ruined. But at the exact same time, I got very excited by this kid playing. He was able to bounce off hits and get back up. There was some times where he got, you know, he took the contact where a guy like Marner or Gaudreau or them know how to avoid it. But, hey, welcome to the league. You're going to get hit. You're going to get jolted. And the response I want to see is, are you going to get back up? Are you going to be a baby about it? Are you going to cry about it? Are you going to be, you know, taking a dumb sticking penalty or whatever it was? You know, he took one penalty. He got the assist.
Yeah.
I like his board play. I liked his wheels. Do I think he's on the roster come Sunday? Yes. Do I think he's a regular in the playoffs? And I said this to Dennis Bernstein, who covers the LA Kings. I said, I don't think he's an everyday, day-in, day-out player during this playoff run. I do think you sprinkle him in when you need an offensive jump and a little bit more speed.
Yep. And I I fully agree with you on that. And for people that know me and know my history in the hockey circles, I spent a lot of time in the OHL circles, and I watched Nick, and I watched his game, and I was so excited to see him play in the Leafs jersey. And like to start that game, he did not disappoint. He was flying. You could see that 89 just up and down the ice, and I'm just like, whoa, like, you know what I mean? He was just everywhere. He looked like a little pinball. It was great, and he was playing with his line mates really well, and that penalty you alluded to, that was, I think, you know, clearly one play he just got beat on, and he just grabbed onto the arm and did what he could to slow him down. And I if you noticed after that penalty when he came out, you didn't notice him for probably about 5-10 minutes. It looked like he was kind of iffy on wanting to get back in there and make that next mistake, you know what I mean? And it was nice to see him bounce back and get back into the play, and like you said, get an assist and get that point. Is, you know, it's an exhibition point, but it's still that confidence builder for him, right, heading into, you know, what's potentially they're going to be the biggest games of his hockey career ever since he's been started playing, right? So I do see him on the roster for the tournament, for the playoffs. I agree with you as well. I don't see him being an everydayer. I think one thing we have on our side nowadays is Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas and their management. And that's one thing, if you guys remember Sheldon Keefe in Toronto in the Marlies system, was he was built around managing his players to the best of their needs and what they can do for him on certain nights. So if you get three games in and you're just lacking that speed, well, there you go. You got a Nick Robertson. And that Nick, the one thing about Robertson is he's ready to go every night. Like, this kid is just full of vinegar and ready to go. Like, you know what I mean? You put him out there, he's going to go 100% all night. It doesn't matter until he's gassed to the point where he's laying on the ice. That's just what you're going to get out of a rookie. That's what you're going to get out of a kid that's dying to play, and a kid that's dying to play in his home, like, you know, in a country where he's grown up and lived to play his whole life, right? So I think he's going to play a part in this playoff series. I think the deeper we get and the more confidence he builds, you're going to see a bigger role for him, especially when Keith really gets a hold of what he can do against other teams. Now, I think I'm going to put this out there. I'm hoping that we don't have to see a Boston.
You never know.
But it's out there. But that's one series I potentially think that you might not see a Nick Robertson.
That goes down to, again, another team that's a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier.
Exactly, right.
You know, and you use that little bit of a zipper like he is, like a speed. You know, he just flies down the ice. You know, he's zipping around. You know, you got that kind of player there. I mean, that could be a thing, right? You know, those zippy guys are the ones you want. And but the thing is, like I alluded to just a moment ago, he did take the contact a few times. So he's able or not yet able, like a Marner or a Goodrow or those kind of guys, to avoid that contact. He actually welcomes it a little bit. And against a team like Boston, you got to be careful welcoming a hit like that.
Yeah, and that's one thing of just learning the game for where you're playing now. I mean, junior OHL, you can take those hits and get away with it a little more than you're going to be able to do in the NHL against grown men and men that have been honing their craft for many, many years. I mean, you do that along the boards or something with a Zdeno Chara or Brad Marchand or whoever, you're going to pay for it, right? So, I mean, even like you see Jake Muzzin. Everybody remember that hit from the Montreal game? Well, that poor guy was standing beside the net and Muzzin just, you know,
sat
him out. Like, that's, you know, that's just what it is, and that's what you got to learn to deal with. So, like you alluded to, you know, the Marners, the Matthews, you're going to have to learn to avoid those hits. And that's all coming with experience, learning where you are, what you're doing, and what you can do. But the nice thing, like you said, he's fearless, and he's going to go in there, and he's going to play hard. And that's just something you got to be excited about. And I'm sure Sheldon Keefe's going to, you know, use every bit of his excitement and his craft and what he can do. So I think, like you said, I think he's going to be a big part of the Leafs going forward, no doubt. I think he's going to play a role in the playoffs, but he's got some learning to do yet. You can see he's just full of energy, and I'm excited to see what he turns out.
No, I'm excited to see what he turns out as well. Like I said, I don't see him as an everydayer, but you never know as things go on, injuries mount.
Yeah.
But there isn't a player on injury right now. 1 second, boys and girls. Got to clear the old throat. So there's one player right now that's sitting there, and he's rehabbing. He's coming back. He's on the ice. They're showing all kinds of different hype videos of him, and that is Andreas Johnsson. He's the X factor that could lead to Mr. Nick Robertson not being in the lineup, not playing as a regular. But my big thing is here. If you go through round one without Andreas Johnsson, and he's available to you in round two, yes, he is a great player. He has speed. He can penalty kill. He can do all of these different things. But we've learned over the years, if you have a group that's clicking and you have a group that's rolling together, do you mess with that chemistry as good as a player is? And I can remember this back when the Toronto Maple Leafs were rolling in the playoffs and Alan McCulley and all those boys were leading the Leafs to great things, and Matt Sundin came back and we thought, yes, our big, huge captain is back. Things are going to go great. And the chemistry tanked. So you got to watch tweaking with things. Do I want Andreas Johnsson in our lineup? Of course I do. The guy can score 20 goals throughout the regular season. He's got speed. He's able to do things that some other guys can't. But one thing that we know about is if guys glue together and are glued together, it may go better to go with the group that brought you to the dance than adding a new partner halfway through.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And there's two sides to this as well. Like, you know, if you're bringing in a guy... like you said, when a team's jelly, when a team's on a run, you don't want to mess with the chemistry. Now, if you're bringing in a guy that's been with the team, playing with the team, or practicing regularly, then I can almost swallow it depending on the situation. But you're bringing back a guy that has been rehabbing a leg surgery, and you know what I mean, and hasn't been able to skate as much as you would want, or hasn't been able to, you know, really do anything that's going to benefit him for when he gets back and to get him back quicker. So if you're bringing him back after he's going to be having to rehab through the whole first series, and then I believe it's potentially still into the second part of this year, or into the second series, you wouldn't get him back for like a week or two into that maybe, right? So you're still losing, you know, what are you gaining if you put him in there at that moment? What X factor is he bringing? Now, if he plays like he did when he went back down to the Marlies after leaving the Leafs that one when the Marlies won the Calder, I mean, I wouldn't be mad. But what are the chances you're getting that from a guy coming fresh off of surgery, fresh off of rehab, hasn't skated, hasn't been able to do the normal things due to COVID as well? I mean, it's just tough, right? It's tough to want to... I love Andreas Johnsson and what he brings to the Leafs, don't get me wrong. I was a big fan of him signing that little contract to stay and see what he could do for the Leafs going forward. I mean, but at the end of the day, what more does he bring you than, say, a Nick Robertson or, you know what I mean, whoever else we bring in? So it's tough. I mean, I love Johnsson. I think he's dynamic, the speed, but is his speed going to be the same? Is his thought process going to be the same? Is he going to be able to go into the corner the way he did before? Is he going to now be more of a, you know, fly through the zone kind of guy? We don't know, right? And these are all things you're not going to know until he's back in the game and skating full speed again, right? So it's tough. I really don't know where you put him in. Or, I mean, if things aren't going well, then by all means, I mean, change it up and do what you got to do. But to put him into a running team or a rolling team, if the team is rolling, like with a Nick Robertson or whoever they have in there, I don't see Andreas Johnsson being enough of an X factor to crawl back in. So I think, you know, I mean, it's, at this point, it's up to Nick Robertson. It's in his hand. If he gets into the lineup and him and Johnsson are essentially battling for that spot, then I believe it's up to Nick Robertson to lose it. And I think with the young staff of the Leafs, I think they're going to give him every opportunity to take that chance. And let's look at the business side. I mean, Johnsson's, what, his deal's up after this year, right? So at the end of the day, now you're looking at dollars and cents as well, right? So who do you give the shot to? What do you do? I mean, that's why Sheldon Keefe and those guys and Brandon Prinham and Kyle Dubas get paid the big money. But I don't see him being enough of an X factor. I really don't. But that's my opinion. I'm sure everybody has different opinions on Johnsson, but I don't know, man. It's tough. It's tough.
It is tough, and I mean, it's going to be a call that comes down to, obviously, coaches, and the players will be asked, same with the management, you know, the captains will be asked, you know, is this something we should do? Obviously, you always want a player, and you always lean, and you hear Babcock, and you hear every coach say, Well, you lean with the guy who's got experience, and Andreas Janssen does have playoff experience. He is a little bit of a pest and an annoyance on the ice, too. So they may lean in that, especially if they're playing a game against or a team like Boston. Maybe they give, you know, Yanni a game, Robertson a game, just to let Janssen get back up to speed and, you know, let that knee come in. But with the playoffs, man, you need everybody on all cylinders. There's no mistakes. Like, you can't fall behind by two games. And let's talk about this. We got the Columbus Blue Jackets for us coming up on the weekend. And obviously, it's going to be the series for the play-in, a five-game series. I've talked to a couple of guys on the Columbus Blue Jacket beat. And I was asking them about Merzlikins. I was asking them about Korpisalo, you know, and just how are they going to fare going into this. And they said, you know, they're leaning towards Merzlikins being the starter, even though John Tortorella won't say anything, just what they've heard. So that's a non-playoff tested goaltender, a guy that's came in this year as a rookie. A lot of pressure, different scenario, no fans, different sight lines. Everything goes in. And as I've said this to many people, and you guys have probably heard me say it a million times till people have been on over the past few months, between the years is the most important part for a goaltender. We know how much mental beasts these guys are and how the mental aspect of their game has to be in line every single time. And this is a different beast. Now, throw that on top of the fact that you've been off for 4 months, you're in a pandemic, you're a rookie goaltender going into a play-in situation where you have to win for your team to advance to the playoffs. That is a lot of pressure on a goaltender that hasn't done a lot on the dance. And then there's the flip side of it. People say, you know what? Maybe it's no pressure. Maybe he feels like he's playing with house money, the both of them, and they can go in and there's no expectations because they're not supposed to be here after losing Bobrovsky, Panarin, Duchesne, you name it. They're not supposed to be at this point of the stage. They're supposed to be sitting at the bottom of the standing. So there's so many things that go in. But I look at this Columbus team, and we've talked about it a couple times, Kyle, already this episode, where they're a team that will wait you out, make you make the mistake, and they'll play a boring, boring brand of hockey until you make those mistakes. And we just talked about Barry and CeCe doing those things. You know, if those things come up, they will pounce on you. And you look at Pierre-Luc Dubois last night against the Boston Bruins, he came ready to play. And, you know, there's lots of guys on that roster that are ready to play. Their grinded mentality is ready. And John Tortorella in his little press conferences is already his snarky, sarcastic-ass self. So this team seems to already be ready for everything. So, you know, on ice, off ice, it seems like they're mid-season form. Kyle, if the Toronto Maple Leafs are to beat the Columbus Blue Jackets, they need to do what?
Well, steady Freddy, we're going to need them. And we're gonna need them to possibly steal us a game or two. I mean, let's be real. The Leafs are famous for overplaying themselves and playing themselves into mistakes. And if you watch the Leafs seriously, they're a lot of fun to watch. They're fast. We are all gas, no brake, and it's awesome to watch. But I think we try to make too many passes. We try to make too many fancy plays rather than the smart plays, and that is what Columbus feeds on. So what we need to do, and when my best, like in my eyes, I think you need to play this as simple of a game as we can with our speed and our skill. You need to simplify it. Play the smart forecheck. Don't get overcompensating for one thing or another. Marner needs to, you know, be the setup guy. JT needs to be the forefront of that line. Matthews has to be a beast. I mean, you're going to need your guys to beat the Columbus Blue Jackets. They are, like you said, a grind you down. We'll play two and a half periods of no-goal hockey, and then we'll score, and we'll just hold you there. That's what they're going to do to you. They have two solid goaltenders, like you alluded to as well, that both can step in and do the job. They've both shown that they can step in and do the job. It's a very scary team, and any team that's coached by John Tortorella, well, I mean, you just got to worry. I mean, you never know what's going to happen with that guy and his teams. He just finds a way to have his teams win. I think Freddie Anderson's going to be our number one. He's going to have to be the number one. He's going to have to give us solid goaltending. And, I mean, like you said when we were talking earlier about, like, the Montreal game as well, he looked great. I mean, he was not overcompensating, going one side too much. He was in his crease. He was in his zone, minus a couple little shots that caught him awkwardly. He looked like his rebound control was there. He looked really calm and really sound. And he's going to have to be that for us. we're not going to be able to afford those mistakes. Like you said, those Tyson Berry mistakes, Cody Ceci, those things are going to, like Columbus will take those and just make us pay. So they're going to have to play simple hockey, smart hockey, and we're going to need Freddie Anderson to be our rock in net. And if we get that and Matthews and JT and Marner and the boys show up, I don't see it being an issue. But if we get into that game where we're trying to be too fancy or CeCe and whatever, whoever is out there is making those brain fart plays, we're going to be in trouble, and it might not be as exciting as we all hope it will be. So hope for the best, right?
You hope for the best, expect the worst, obviously being Leaf fans. But for me, I look at it like this. They are calling the penalties so far in each game I've seen pretty much even down the way. You know, nothing was being let go too much, and obviously that's the refs because they know they're under a bubble and they can hear everything, and everything's there now. There's no fanfare, so you're not getting a fan-boosted call. For me, the Toronto Maple Leafs can do what the Boston Bruins have done to us the past couple of years and use their power play muscle as the way to win this series. Obviously, we talked about, you know, Columbus wanting to grind you down and playing the weight style. Well, if you dictate the pace, if you roll four lines and finally the Toronto Maple Leafs make a team chase them, make a team chase their lines, roll line after line and have them try to chase you, no matter if you're home or away, have them chase you and keep rolling line after line after line after line, because each line we have has a certain element of speed. So if you can do that and make the Columbus Blue Jackets get just a little lazy and take one of those penalties while they're trying to wear you down, that is where you can strike. That is where you can get your bread and butter. And that is where we can win this series. For me, this series is going to be won on the power play, because I don't think they have the same grits and gits that the Columbus Blue Jackets have to grind us out. So I think it's going to come down to our speed and the power play to win this series. And I want to dispel something right now. We talked about it on Monday a little bit with Jen, and it's been brought up numerous times. If Freddie goes cold for a game or two, do you go to Jack Campbell? And is Jack Campbell the heir apparent in Toronto? Let me tell you something. I said it before, and I'll say it again. If you listen to the episode with Dennis Bernstein, Mr. Jack Campbell is a great backup goaltender. He's the one that Toronto needs. But he had the opportunity when Quick went down in L.A. to seize the reins and become the heir apparent number one while Quick was out, and he did not do it. He struggled. So obviously he's good, like McElhaney was, in the backup role, and will excel in that spot. So guys, put it to bed. Put that notion away. Campbell's there if we need him for an injury replacement. God forbid if we need him for an injury replacement. God forbid, don't get hurt. Not putting that out there. Don't put that juju in the air. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't do it like that, please.
But
we don't need it.
He's there, you know, maybe for whatever reason you're closing out a series, or, you know, you're up big or something, and you want to give Freddie just a little bit of a rest, especially with the series against Columbus, where there is back-to-back games, ladies and gentlemen, in the playoffs. Never heard of that before. Back-to-back nights, game 3 and game 4, back-to-back. So you know Freddie may be a little bit gassed or whatever it may be, and that maybe you're closing out the series, or maybe you're up 2-0. At that point, just ladies and gentlemen, please don't jump all over me if they go down 2-0. I'm just saying, if you're up 2-0 at that point, do you throw in Jack Campbell in that third game and say, hey, win us the series, close it out, give Freddie a rest? Or do you keep going to Freddie? And then if you lose that one, do you go to Jack in the fourth game? I don't know what you do, but I know that you don't want to burn out your goalie, but you've been off for 4 freaking months. So are you really going to be that tired? I don't know, but
yeah.
We got to dispel the notion that Jack Campbell's going to be starting over Freddie, because that just ain't flying.
It's not flying, no. And whoever believes that's an actual possibility, barring Freddie Anderson just becoming a goalie full of holes, then maybe. But I mean, to be serious, Freddie Anderson's number one. He's going to be number one. I think it showed with that exhibition game that Freddie's not giving up that crease. It doesn't matter. And I think you can remember this from in the season and back even last year. You know, when he's getting up to that 50, 60 game mark, he didn't want to come out of the net. He doesn't want to be out of that net. He's a goalie that loves to play every minute of every game, and he wants to be in the net. He takes it personally, and I like that. You watch him in practice. I've had the chance of watching him, and I mean, you can see when he gets scored on, he gets mad in practice. Like, he doesn't like it. He doesn't want to give up his crease. That's his goal, and I think he's going to ride it out. I think, barring you know, a terrible start to the playoffs. Then you see a Jack Campbell, and like you said, he is that number two that we have needed. You know, he's going to go in there and he's going to do a job. He can make those saves. He can make the big time saves when you need it. And he's that kind of guy. And I mean, how is he not a guy you can't love? Like, I mean, he's just, he fits Toronto perfectly, and I hope he stays, and I love him as a goaltender. But Freddie Anderson's our number one. He's going to be the Leafs' number one. And to be honest, folks, it always comes back to it. Goaltending is going to be what wins you games. I mean, look at what Montreal is literally, like, if you're not afraid of Montreal stealing a couple games in these five-game series, like, you better watch out for Carey Price. Like, he can literally win Montreal the series. Like, if he can hold a couple games to shutouts, you know what I mean? It's a whole different lopsided game now. And then, you know, then you're chasing, and this goes back to the Leafs, too. The Leafs are going to need Freddie to hold the fort, because if the Leafs can get that go-ahead goal or get in the lead and have Columbus chase them, Columbus is not the team they can beat. Columbus doesn't play that way. They hate chasing. They wanna have the lead and grind you down. You know what I mean? So Freddie's gonna have to be that guy. But if, like you said, if for some reason he can't be that guy, then at least we know we have Jack Campbell waiting in the wings, and he's gonna be there, and you can feel comfortable with him going into net and taking over if we need him. So, but let's be real, like you said, Freddie's number one, and that's just how it's gonna be.
That is how it's going to be. Well, I cannot wait for this weekend to kick off. It is going to be a great time. We have a lot coming up this weekend in terms of the podcast. Lots coming out. Of course, we'll have another hashtag prediction season video and lots of fun things popping off, so stay tuned. Kyle, I want to thank you very much for filling in for the co-host chair. That is now your permanent chair, ladies and gentlemen. So make sure you show Kyle some love on the Offside Twitter. Make sure you're following along on all the socials. Check out MBKO as well. And be sure to check out Kyle Outridge Productions. Get yourself in line with all of those, and he will take care of you in everything you need.
Yes, sir. Proud to be on. Proud to be part of OHT Offside Hockey Talk team. And I appreciate you, sir. Thank you for bringing me on board. So we got a lot to talk about. Hockey's back, folks. Let's get pumped up. Let's just enjoy it for what it is. Remember, it's hockey. It's a distraction. Enjoy it. Hey, let's go. Go Leafs, go.
Go Leafs, go, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, so that is Kyle Outridge, my co-host here on Offside Hockey Talk. Of course, on Mondays, it's myself, Jen, and Kyle sitting down talking about the issues and the game of hockey that is going on throughout the playoff rounds. Now, if you want to get yourself in line, make sure you check out each and every one of our Twitter profiles, Instagrams, you name it. Get in there, get ready. And, of course, we have something coming up very special for your ears, an interview with J.D. Greenway, Leafs prospect, and Jamie McCowan, former Toronto Maple Leaf and two-time Stanley Cup champion, will be joining the show this weekend as well. All right, get your ears ready, get locked in, because here we go. Offside Hockey Talk, where hockey comes to talk.